Bowtech Archery prides themselves on offering a bow for everyone. Whether you have a short draw length, a long draw length, pull 70 pounds or 40 pounds, you're a bow hunter or a target archer, they offer a bow that can be customized to fit your body type. On top of that, their deadlock technology allows you to fine-tune your arrow flight. Visit bowtecharchery.com and check out the SR350 and the CP28. Bowtech Archery, refuse to follow.
Transform the way you hunt with the all-new Base cellular trail camera connected by the Moultrie mobile app. Moultrie mobile's industry-best app gives you complete control over your camera settings, up-to-the-minute updates from the field, and other interactive scouting tools on your smartphone or computer. Features like weather forecast, advanced species recognition, interactive maps, and a whole lot more. For more information and to make your purchase, visit www.moultriemobile.com.
This is the Average Conservationist podcast brought to you by Outdoor Class and in partner with 2% for Conservation. Outdoor Class is the new single source of premium outdoor education from trusted, knowledgeable experts. For hunters committed to improving their skills, Outdoor Class is the only subscription-based e-learning platform that provides unlimited access to video lessons from the world's most respected experts covering topics across a hunter's entire journey. Learn from industry leaders like Corey Jacobson, Randy Newberg, Remy Warren, and other prominent personalities in the organizations. Sign up today and use code AVERAGE to save 20%. 2% for Conservation's mission is to create an alliance of businesses and individuals that ensure the future of hunting and angling by committing their time and dollars to fish and wildlife. 1% of your time plus 1% of your money equals 2% for Conservation. 2% helps businesses and people pair with conservation causes to support things that fit what they care about. Whether you're into fishing, hunting, or just getting outdoors, 2% can help you not only start giving back to wildlife, but get certified for it. Getting 2% certified means you've made the same commitment as popular brands like Sitka, Stone Glacier, and Seek Outside in giving at least 1% of your time and dollars back to wildlife. But it's not just for outdoor companies. Breweries, contractors, coffee roasters, and even piano repair companies have earned 2% certification and stand out as leaders in their communities for doing so. Businesses that are committed to conservation deserve your business when you shop. Learn more about 2% for Conservation at fishandwildlife.org. That's fishandwildlife.org. Right. Happy Wednesday, everyone. Welcome back to the Average Conservationist podcast, and I'm your host, Marcus Ewing. Got a good one for you today. Today, I am joined by Cody Wright, and Cody is the owner and founder of 2% Certified Barbell Basecamp. And what Barbell Basecamp is, it's almost like I would call it a community, or that is at least what Cody is trying to build with Barbell Basecamp. And it is designed to help prepare hunters for those Western hunts. A lot of people, a lot of hunters that are coming from the Midwest or the East really don't fully know what to expect, especially on their first trip, right? They don't know what to expect in terms of the terrain, the elevation, all those things that we read about, we listen to on podcasts, but there's really no way to fully understand what type of toll it's going to take on your body, both physically, mentally. So what Cody is trying to build is various programs that hunters can use really throughout the entire year, whether it's leading up to a hunt, during hunting season, after the hunting season, kind of leading into it, all these things to really help train and prepare you as best as possible for, you know, the physical and mental demands that you're going to be getting into when you embark on that Western hunt, especially if it's your first time or maybe you've gone once and you struggled, because you thought you were prepared or from an overall physical fitness standpoint, you were in good shape. But the mountain is something totally different. So these workouts are tailored to really try to strengthen those muscles that you're going to need or that you're going to really utilize, when you're in the backcountry. Cody really talks of, he tells a really good story about his first Western hunt and how that kind of really spurred the idea for Barbell Base Camp, and again, what he's trying to build with this, and really try to fill that piece of the puzzle, or put together or offer that piece of the puzzle to the grand scheme of things when you're embarking on that first hunt. And then along with that, we get to certainly talk about, you know, the conservation piece, why it's so important to him, you know, what the outdoors looked like to him, and why it's something that he's really enjoyed and spent a lot of time doing since his early years growing up on a ranch in Oklahoma. So super cool episode, one that I certainly enjoyed, and I think you guys are going to too. So episode 115, Cody Wright, Barbell Base Camp. Enjoy. Today's episodes are going to be brought to you by Hardside Hydration. If you're looking for a rugged and dependable hydration setup for the backcountry, you need to visit hardsidehydration.com and check out the Swig Rig. And their Swig Rig converts any Nalgene bottle into the perfect hydration setup. It gives you an option that's easy to clean, easy to access, and allows you the peace of mind that your hydration setup isn't going to fail you in the backcountry. I have one of these. I have not used it on a backcountry hunt, but I've used it for various other things, and the application is flawless. Super easy to set up. Again, easy to clean. If you want to run powder drinks, you got that in there. It's the perfect setup. Super easy to use, durable. Never any question on if it's going to fail. So head over again to hardsidehydration.com and check out their Swig Rig, and also some new swag that they just dropped I think maybe a week or so ago too. So some cool stuff to grab there. Today's episode is also going to be brought to you by, Go Hunt. If you have not, now is the perfect time to head over to GoHunt.com and check out their Explorer membership for their mapping system. It's a great tool to use. There's a bunch of new features that were recently added that will really help make, all of your e-scouting that much easier. And then when it comes time to actually get into the field, you're going to be fully prepared. You're going to have everything accessible, ready. You're not going to have to worry about what layers, or if you forgot to turn layers on when you were downloading your maps. You can download the specific area that you're going to go in. So basically, it's going to be very tailor-made to your exact situation when you're in the field. So if you are going to do that, or if you want to sign up to become an insider, use code AVERAGE at checkout. You're going to save 20%. And with that, if you sign up for an insider membership, you're going to get $50 to use towards their gear shop. Or if you sign up for their Explorer membership, you're going to get $20 to use towards their gear shop. So again, use code AVERAGE at checkout, and that's gohunt.com. All right, Mr. Cody Wright, welcome to the podcast, man. How are you today?
Thanks, Marcus, man. I'm doing good. How about yourself?
Hey, I'm doing well. It's a Wednesday afternoon in sunny Michigan here. It's actually, we were going through this terrible like hot spell where it was just like super humid, super muggy for a good stretch there. And yesterday it finally broke and it was only like mid 70s and the humidity was way down. So got to open the windows up, get the kind of the funkiness from air conditioning out of the house and everything. So it's going well, man.
Man, that sounds nice. I don't know when the last day was that we didn't have triple digit heat here in Central Texas.
Oh, I sometimes, you know, I don't get me wrong. Like, I love summer. I mean, there's just a plethora of things to do, especially here in Michigan. And I love, you know, the sunshine, the warm, you know, the warm air and all that stuff. And, you know, when you're in the wintertime, you're like, oh man, I wish it were, summer again. But sometimes it's just, there's just too hot. Right, where you don't want to be doing anything. You know, depending upon what you do for a living, sometimes you don't really have a choice, right? You got to be knee deep in it.
Yeah, there's a lot of times I'm like, man, I sure am looking forward to fall.
Yeah.
For more than one reason.
Right.
Yeah, ready to get away from the triple digit heat for a little while.
Yeah, for sure. Well, no, man, I'm glad we're able to do this. I know we've been in contact for a few months, kind of going back and forth, trying to get our schedules to align, and today we're able to make it happen. So I'm excited to hear more about Barbell Base Camp and everything that you have going on there, and kind of your story and your journey that brought you to this point.
Yeah, man. Hey, I sure appreciate you having me on. Looking forward to it.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's kind of start at the beginning here, Cody. Tell me a bit about yourself.
So as a full-time job, I am a construction guy. As I've got a residential home construction company, we just build all custom homes out here in Central Texas and the Highland Lakes area. And then aside from that, we got Barbell Base Camp, which has kind of been my project for a couple of years now. It's my main passion really in life is health and fitness and hunting. And so being able to bring those two together it's been a really cool deal.
So you're in Central Texas there. Born and raised in Texas, or you transplant? How did you end up there?
Man, I'm a transplant, actually. I moved here about 5 years ago. I was originally from northeastern Oklahoma, ranching my whole life on a ranch up there outside of Cleora, Oklahoma. I went to school, did my undergraduate at Oklahoma State University. I met my wife there. She's from the area we're at now. So came down here and visit, man, just fell in love. So after undergraduate, we came down here and man, I just hadn't left.
Yeah. Yeah. I can't say that I blame you, you know, despite the heat, Texas is a beautiful state, and it, especially in terms of, you know, outdoor activities, outdoor pursuits that you can get into, man, there sure is a ton down there.
Absolutely. That and the people, you just can't beat it.
Yeah. Yeah. There's something about that kind of that hospitality that you get when you're in Texas. It's hard to kind of put your finger on or really explain, but you know it when you see it, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So you mentioned that you had this passion and really, I think, kind of a curiosity for fitness and things like that. Where did that come from? Was that something that, you know, sports maybe in high school, or just realized as you got older, you know, the importance of taking care of yourself? Where does that passion really come from?
Man, it actually started pretty young in life. Actually, as a middle schooler, I really started getting into weightlifting, originally for football. But it was kind of just like my escape in my happy place growing up, as I just loved hitting the gym, was pretty religious about it. That transferred on. I played football and played tennis and powerlifting in high school. And whenever I went to Oklahoma State for my undergraduate, I was actually a part of their powerlifting team. So that carried on through that. And then was able to work as a strength and conditioning coach for the University of Oklahoma while I was doing my undergraduate, and training athletes there for track and football. So that was a really cool thing, getting to work with such high-level athletes. And then past that, it's grown into a couple different areas, between training just regular athletes and people, first responders and stuff. Actually been able to work with some special forces guys, all the way from doing stuff for their train-ups and workups, SWAT guys in San Antonio, and then even on the other side of the spectrum, doing prep for some marathon runners for the Boston Qualifier.
Wow.
It's been a full range of things, but it's always been my passion. It's just never been able to have that spotlight that I'd like it, what I'd like to have.
Yeah, and I'd imagine that probably from a trainer standpoint, right? That just makes you that much more well-rounded, being able to train and really set up a marathon runner for, set them up for success and put them in a position to be, you know, as prepared as possible for, especially for, you know, something like a Boston Qualifier or a race of that magnitude. But then also if you look at like, you know, high-level athletes like in college to special operations in the military, things like that. I mean, that is a wide array of people that need training, and probably very specific and different training as well.
It is, man. It's been really cool. I've been really lucky to be able to have such a broad spectrum of training that I mean, it can apply in so many ways, but it's so different for each athlete, especially being, you know, the different specializations from special forces to SWAT to a marathon runner to a D1 athlete. I mean, they all need something different, but like the foundations really in the hard work and how to create the programs is pretty similar, but it's been a neat thing.
Yeah, you mentioned something there about your time in high school and mentioning, you know, you got into the lifting at a young age, and then, you know, you really started training for, you said, football, and then you very casually dropped in there tennis, which I just and then you said obviously powerlifting. So you're like, football, powerlifting, tennis. Like I hadn't heard those three together, and it kind of almost made me chuckle, because when I, you know, picture obviously like someone that's doing powerlifting, I'm thinking of, you know, very strong, you know, very big, broad shoulders, something like that. And then I don't necessarily think about that person, you know, on a tennis court as well.
It was a funny thing, you know, I was 182 pounds and pretty lean. So it was definitely not your typical your typical tennis player, but it just helped me be more of a multifaceted athlete. You know, I wasn't just some big meathead who could only, you know, flex in the mirror type of thing. I was like, I had to be mobile. And I think that's where a lot of the kind of holistic hybrid athlete training methodology really came from, is trying to be the guy that had muscles and being able to have that functionality of the strength behind it by, on the other term, also being able to move and be able to have endurance. It's just, there's a lot of people don't think you can have both, but it's actually something that's critical if you want to have a long-term sustainability with it.
Yeah, no, I think I could not agree more with you, because, you know, I did sports and everything for, you know, the better part of my, you know, early life, and then, you know, up until early 20s. And the importance behind, well, let me back up. I realized later in life the importance of playing all of these different sports, you know, when you were young and in high school. I did baseball, basketball, football, and then one year I did track as well, because we could do track and baseball at the same time, which worked out. But the things that you gain from a physical standpoint, from an agility standpoint in basketball, you know, translate to on the football field. The hand-eye coordination from baseball translate to, you know, to catching a pass in football or something along those lines. I mean, the, like you said, the cross training or the cross, you know, functionality between all those sports just makes you so much more well-rounded later on in life. And you find that you can pick up sports or hobbies later on in life, and you pick them up that much quicker just because of all the things you've done kind of leading up to that point.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
So Barbell Base Camp, how did that idea really come about for you?
So there was actually a pivotal moment a couple years back growing up in northeastern Oklahoma. I didn't really have a chance to go out west hunting. And it's something grown up just dreaming about doing, but didn't have that available to me as a kid. And so finally, here a couple years back in 2018, I was able to have the time and to be able to put the effort into training to go out west on a hunt in Colorado for first rifle season elk hunt in the Ucumpare Wilderness, so up there central western Colorado. And so I'd been training, I've been pretty dedicated for the past decade of 5 or 6 days a week working out, and cardio hadn't always been there, but I was trying to dial it all in. I was running a bunch between 20 and 30 miles a week, so I felt like I had a good base for it. So I go up there a couple days before season starts, and we're glassing, and we get lucky and see a really nice 6x6 bull across a ridge from us. We'd seen another hunter a little bit lower down from us on a different ridge glassing the same area, so we thought, oh, there should be a pretty easy way about getting over there. So I was able to get close enough to where I felt comfortable with my rifle setup. 624-yard shot, put him down first shot, and they're like, okay, now the work begins. So we're like, okay, we're going to go try and just hop. It shouldn't be a big deal. You know, this guy's hunting right here. It looks like there's a narrow path here between the two ridges. We should be able to walk through this drainage and get up on that other side. And whenever we go to get down there, there's a house-sized boulder that has broken off. Later found out about 2 years ago, there was a nice navigable path before then, but it broke off somehow, fell down in there. And so we're like, oh crap, you know, like how in the world are we gonna get across here? So thankfully we had our Onyx maps, pulled them up and trying to find them out. You know, this is before Go Hunt had their whole setup.
Yeah.
So we pull it up and try and find something, and there's a horse trail that is about 4 miles from where we're at, where it starts to then go across this big ravine where this canyon is, and then go back up the other 6 miles back to the north where my bull's at. So I shot this thing first light. So it was, by the time the shot rang, it was like 8 o'clock in the morning, so it was still real early. And by the time we finally made it over to him, it was 10 miles there that first day, because we kind of like trying to meander through. So it was 10 miles there, and it was 6 o'clock that night. So it was a 10-hour hike over there of trying to figure out. We had about 3,000 foot of vertical drop and elevation gain So I was like, oh man, it's like we hadn't even cut this thing up yet, and we've already put a full day of work into it.
Yeah.
And so that's, we finally get him quartered up, hang him up, and start heading out of there at midnight. And from that point on, it took us till 6 in the morning to load him out the first time. Like, okay, we're disgusting. We're going to go try and just get us the cheapest hotel possible somewhere, clean up, and we're going to get a couple hours rest and come back. So we head out to Delta, which is the closest town, and there was not a single hotel that had any vacancy. Maybe it was the time we were coming in, but for whatever reason, there was a convention. Of all places, there was a convention in town that booked up all the hotels. So we spent the next hour driving to Grand Junction to try and find a hotel. We get one. It's 9 in the morning at this point by the time we get into a hotel room. We sleep for 2.5 hours, get up at 11:30, and head back out to the mountain. And we get back out there. At this point, we know what we're doing. We made sure to leave a trail back and forth to the bull. We get him packed out the rest of the way, and in the past 2 days we'd spent 50 miles hiking in and out getting this bull, and my first 2 days of western hunting ever, and that was, it was just not what I was expecting.
I'm listening to this, and to try to, for me, really understand or to put myself in your position, in your shoes, that's jumping into the deep end with, like I said before, like a weighted vest and, you know, steel toe boots on, like everything you can do to make this as hard as possible is essentially what happened to you in your first ever crack at western hunting.
Absolutely. Yeah. I wouldn't have wanted it any other way, because it was a real pivotal moment of like, wow, this is what I've been wanting. Like, it's so much different than hunting in the Midwest. Cause like, you know, you either, you do spot and stalk, but most of the time you're just in a tree stand,
yeah,
which is super fun in its own way, but it doesn't push you like western hunting does. And so going on that hunt just really fueled the fire of, man, I know there are so many other people out there that want to be able to go out western hunting, but don't know how to do it or don't know how to train for it. And so that's Barbell Base Camp. Really just came from that of just, I want to build a community and be able to have a platform of really showing people, hey, if you want to do this and get serious about it, this is where you should start.
Yeah, no, that's a great reason, because, you know, look at it, and I'm sure you probably, you know, retrospectively looked at it and said, you know, I was in good shape, you know, even if it wasn't necessarily the right kind of shape, let's say, just because it wasn't necessarily... Your training and everything wasn't specific as it probably would be now, right? But you're still, you know,
exactly.
You're young, you're in good shape, you know, you're running a lot, you're strong, and then you go out into the mountains and it's a whole nother beast, right? It just kind of chews you up, and that's the way of the mountain. To be able to prepare for that, I think, and I've listened to a ton of podcasts, I've read a ton of articles myself, and it's almost like there's no substitute. Or it's hard to get a substitute for actually being in the mountains, but to have programs available that are going to be the next best thing, I think it's something that anyone who is serious about, you know, pursuing Western animals, Western big game, is something that they absolutely, you know, need to take seriously before they embark on that journey.
Absolutely. I mean, sure, you can just roll off the couch and go do a western hunt, but it's probably not going to be the hunt that you had in mind. You know, it's so physical and mental trying to have a successful hunt, especially on public lands. So like, you're competing with all these other guys, and they may be from the area, so they've already got a leg up on you. So why put yourself at such a disadvantage whenever you can do everything that is possible within your power and your circumstance to get prepared?
Yeah, and that... The thing that you just mentioned there, that mental aspect of it, is I think that's one of the things that a lot of people probably aren't expecting to really come face to face with when they're out there, right? They don't know what it's going to take to keep going. They've never pushed themselves to the point of breaking, so to speak, and they're just not ready for it. And that's one of the things that is hard to train for. But I think in order to do that, what you need to do is leading up to it, and just, you know, even in your everyday life, you've got to put yourself in tough situations. You've got to do hard things. I guess it is a very basic way of saying it, right?
I mean, that's the rudimentary way, but that's, you're exactly right. If you've not done hard things, how do you expect to handle them well?
Yeah.
So, I mean, you're exactly right. And that can come from weightlifting, but what I've found as far as outside of hunting, but within a training circumstance, is those endurance training time. So like going out and actually having a really good endurance running base and having a structured plan behind that, where you're not running hard every single day of the week, but like having a good base plan to where you're building your aerobic fitness, but running's hard. And it doesn't matter how much you've done it. If you're doing it right, it's always going to be hard. And so that seems to lead to be a really good way to have some sort of base without being out on the mountain.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And I think of, you know, this is just a kind of a small personal example of kind of making sure you're in that right headspace is, last summer, I was training to run a marathon, and pulled a hamstring in some training, didn't stretch very well before a run, and it put me on the sidelines for like 3 weeks. Like I couldn't get it healed. Basically in that time I realized like I'm not going to be where I want to be in order to run this race. Right. So I kind of reassessed, made a new game plan, decided to do this other race. It was a 10-mile race. And I thought to myself, like, I know I can be prepared for this. And so forth and so on. And kind of throughout that training process, like, I have a treadmill and I would run outside. I would get on the treadmill and I could just, you know, vary the speed or set the speed and I could just go, right? I didn't think about it. I didn't really get, you know, I felt good. That's, I guess, is a good way to put it. And then sure. I would go out on the, you know, run outside, and it's a whole different ball of wax because you actually have to do all of the work, right? You don't just have to kind of put one foot in front of the other to maintain your speed like a treadmill does. You have to actually in your mind say, okay, I've got to pick up the pace. I got to slow my pace down. You're looking at your watch and you're trying to figure out what your pace is and all that. And you're checking your heart rate. You're doing all the things that you do, you know, when you're out for any type of lengthy run. And just that little just difference, right, between running on a treadmill and running outside is, it's all just, it's like a mental, it's all mental, right? Without cussing too much. I mean, that's just what it is. And it's, I don't think that a lot of people really understand that mental aspect, and not just Western hunting and training, but just life in general. When things get hard, a lot of times people just fold it in because they've never put themselves in an uncomfortable situation.
You're right. And you're absolutely right as far as the treadmill versus outside. Like, you're taking so many of those variables out whenever you're on the treadmill. Like, you don't have to worry about the weather. You've always got water right next to you. You can quit at any point. Like, there's no, it's just an easy quit button there. Yep. Whereas whenever you're out running, you're doing it regardless whether you're walking home or you just finish it out. So there's just so many more variables that come in there that make it real life. As far as having differences in the road, whether you're running on gravel, running on pavement, difference in inclines and declines. I mean, there's so much more to it, and that helps you be more prepared.
Yeah, absolutely. So what did that process look like after you had your experience with with your elk hunt there, and then you realize, you know, okay, you want to build this community and give people a place to be better prepared, where, you know, hunting and fitness kind of cross paths. What did the process look like for you to kind of get the ball in motion to get things started with Barbell Base Camp?
Man, it was crazy at first. I didn't know really how to go about any of it because I'm not naturally good at social media or any of that. I don't have a whole lot of experience, you know, didn't have any experience building websites or trying to figure out how in the world to promote this or get this out there in a platform that made any sense and that looked good at all. So it was a huge learning curve for me. It all kind of started as far as trying to get programs that wasn't just something I wanted to do, but for other people. I tried it with my friends. I've tried it with some of the other guys in the Army with me, and I'm in the Texas Army National Guard. And so I, as a scout, platoon member, I've been able to use those starting out, use the guys on my team, and just trying to help them prep for missions. So, I mean, which is very similar to training for hunting, you know, being in the Army, you've got a rucksack on all the time, and which is what you're doing hunting.
Yeah.
So that was a really good base. But then once I finally got some programs dialed in where I felt good about the full construction of bringing in the endurance base and the rucking base, and then having the strength and conditioning on top of that, I've been able to start and try and really figure out the whole website design of things. If I don't have the product, there's no point in building a platform. And so once I was able to come up with that whole product line of, which is our overbuilt backcountry hunter training series, where I've got 7 different programs that span the whole 365 days of the year, whether you're in the off season, the postseason, the preseason, or actually in hunting season, there's workouts that will help get you through those phases. I was able to figure out how in the world to build this website in a way that made sense for other people, through a lot of trial and error and changing things up and trying to learn how to do different coding. And it's been a really cool process, but it's been a ton of work.
So what goes into actually putting together, you know, one of your programs, whether it's, you know, let's take, for example, you know, the preseason, like, you know, the workup to actually going on your hunt. What goes into that process of putting that workout plan together?
Sure. I mean, just the first thing is going to be deciding what the main focus and goal needs to be. And for us, it's hunt specific training. So stuff that is going to directly correlate with what you'll be doing out in the field. So that'll be, we do 5 full body days of workouts each week, with running on top of that. The workouts are all about 1 to 1.5 hours, depending on the day. And just trying to incorporate as many movements that we can into, a lot of it is hip stability, core strength, back strength, and leg strength. You know, the area is what you're going to be using the most. And so we'll have at least one day a week where you got your pack on, whether you're doing box step ups or box lunges, box squats, all with the pack on, doing different movements. And then from there, it's going to be doing what's called progressive overload, which is continuously building upon that base that we've made throughout the rest of the year. So, like, whatever your volume or your weight or the reps are, like, it's ever increasing in a way that's sustainable. It's where we're always being able to build without building too much and then getting hurt.
Okay. So it doesn't sound necessarily like the workout I want if, you know, I want to look a little bit better in a tank top, eh?
For the preseason, it's not. No, for the preseason, no. But there's other times in the year where that's absolutely the case, the focus. So, like, during the start of the postseason, so directly coming off of your season, you know, you're probably going to be kind of worn down. We focus on the recovery and the mobility, and then we start building that strength base and start working on hypertrophy, so, like, building muscle mass. During the second half of that eight-week program, and then all of the next 2 phases, the off-season 1 and off-season 2, where you've got 16 weeks, is all focused on strength and hypertrophy, so building muscle. So that, which is perfect, because during that time of the year, you're prepping for summer anyway.
Yeah,
so
absolutely.
I've tried to think it through in a way that is functional for on and off the mountain.
Yeah, no, right on. So one of the questions I was going to have was, so let's say someone who isn't necessarily planning for a Western hunt, right? But they still want to get in shape, you know, maybe just going to the gym and doing things on their own hasn't really been what they're looking for. Is this still a program that someone who just says, hey, I just want to get in better shape, you know, I like what I see in terms of, you know, the full body aspect, the building the strength, the building the endurance, all those things. Is this still something that you would recommend to someone who really maybe has no interest in hunting, just wants to, you know, be in better physical fitness?
Absolutely. I mean, and if you have no interest in hunting, just cut the in season and the preseason out of it if you're not wanting to, like, get into any of that. Because if the preseason can be really good for also building that endurance. But if you're trying to just, if your goal is staying in shape or building muscle, then just cut that one out, and you still have 3 or 4 other programs currently on the website that are focused on building that. But we've actually got another line of programs, which is going to be the power building series, which is going to be geared towards the hunter, but just given some extra, basically, full spectrum of training. So if you want a different kind of training split than what that program offers, we'll have a couple different ones that'll be able to get that for you coming up.
Okay, right on. And I know, well, anyone who, you know, is serious about their physical fitness knows that obviously a workout regimen is very important, but I think what's maybe more important is the diet aspect of things, right? Making sure you're putting good food into your body to be fueled for those workouts and for those hunts. So do you guys offer any type of nutrition plan or kind of some basic guidelines to help keep people on the right track during their training?
Absolutely. So right now we've got a nutrition 101 blog post that it kind of lays out all of the basic type of schemes of things of, you know, what's a fat, what's a carb, what's a protein, why do I need them, when do I need them, and how many of them do I need. We're not currently offering any like specific meal programs, but I'm definitely going to be focusing more on adding in some more specific stuff without giving like a full curated meal plan, just to make sure that everybody can read this and say, okay, this is how I can apply this to me personally, rather than just focusing on single individuals.
Yeah, I'm not a fitness guru by any means, but I mean, they call that your macros, correct? Is that right?
That's right.
Yeah, figuring yes. I remember the first time I read that, and this was, you know, years ago, I was like, what the hell are macros? Right. And then I'm like, it took me a while to kind of wrap my head around it. And, you know, kind of the third grade way of saying is, it's like, oh, it's your fats, your proteins, and your carbs, right? Just, you know, how much of each of those you're eating or should be eating to, you know, do what you want your body to do.
Exactly. And even more on that is where you're getting those from. So if it's from a bunch of processed food, you know, that you're getting from Wendy's or Dairy Queen, it's probably not what you could be fueling your body with in terms of real performance.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. And as I get older, I mean, I'm in my late 30s now, but I've certainly noticed just a slowdown in general of my body, right? Just the inconsistency of working out, you know, when I am, I feel great, and everything kind of seems to fall in place, but it doesn't take long. Like if I have an injury or, you know, whatever the case, I just get off my routine. I go back to feeling kind of like shit really quickly, right? Like it does not take me long at this point in life to fall back into some bad habits, and just your body just doesn't recover like it did when I was in my early 20s.
It definitely starts to wear on you as you get older. And it's like you're saying, it's amazing how fast, even if not the physical aspect, the mental aspect of, oh man, I'm not in my routine, I don't want to do this anymore. It's hard to stay with it until you look in the mirror and you're like, I'm not happy. I've got to make a change.
Yeah, shirts start fitting a little bit tighter that always fit you before. All of a sudden, you've got to take the belt loop. You got to take the notch in the belt out one, and you're like, huh, haven't used this one before. That's probably not a good thing.
Right. Yeah. It's all about the consistency at that point, which is tough, especially whenever you're juggling so many other things in life.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it is. And it's just, you've just got to make it a priority, right? You've just got to know that, and especially, you know, I'm at the point where I've got two young kids and they're just, you know, balls of energy, and they're always go, 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 go. And I knew that when I had kids, I wanted to be able to keep up with them, you know, to a certain degree, as much as I can keep up with a, you know, a 5 and a 3-year-old. But that's, it's certainly become, in recent years, much more important, my health and fitness, because yeah, I don't want to be when they're, you know, 15, 16 years old and, you know, my son wants to play catch, or, you know, he wants to go skiing, or he wants to go on a Western hunt or something like that, that I can't, you know, I don't want to have to say like, sorry, pal, like, I just can't do it, right? Like my body's just, there's no chance that I'm going to be able to put myself through that. So being cognizant of those things has certainly, you know, made health and fitness much more of a priority in my life.
Sure, and making those decisions now rather than waiting until you're in that moment to say, oh, I need to get better. You're just making those years come in the future, so much easier to stay in shape now. So like, you're going to be able to so much easier stay healthy than as if you're going to just say, oh, I'm going to sit on the couch. Oh, the kids are grown now. I better start doing something. It's yeah. just a lot harder if you haven't done anything in so long.
Yeah. So kind of to switch gears a bit here, you grew up in Oklahoma. So what did the outdoors look like for you growing up? I mean, I know you were on a ranch, but did you grow up hunting and fishing and things like that, or what did that look like?
Absolutely. That was my only thing I cared about aside from lifting weights and sports was hunting. So my whole fall was dedicated to whitetail and hunting duck, and we thankfully at that time had a bunch of quail and pheasant, but unfortunately those ended up getting all killed off during a bad freeze one year. But my life had been very much revolved around hunting whitetail and duck. And then fishing, I love to fish during the summers because, you know, at that point, you're either hunting squirrels or you're fishing. If you're wanting yeah. to do anything as far as that goes. So I spent a whole lot of time on the lake. We thankfully lived very close to one, so I was able to spend a lot of time either fishing from the ponds on the ranch or going out to the lake and crappie and catfishing there. So that was, aside from sports, my really only other hobby.
Yeah, I mean, that sounds... a whole lot like my upbringing. I mean, I grew up in a rural area as well, so there wasn't really a lot to do, right? It was, you know, sports were obviously, like I mentioned before, very big in my life. But then the outdoors, I mean, that was something for me to do, but it was also a way for me to spend time, you know, with my dad. He was a huge outdoorsman, and he was one of those guys who was very passionate about whatever he kind of set his sights on. I mean, whether it was, you know, whitetail hunting, you know, he got really big into fly fishing and then like fishing on the Great Lakes for walleye and things like that. He didn't know how to half-ass things, which
is a great thing to have.
Yeah. Yeah. Unfortunately though, the things he, you know, really got into are, you know, can get very pricey very quick.
Sure.
I definitely learned from him at an early age, like if you're going to buy something, you might as well buy the best that you can afford. And you might as well have a lot of those things as well, right? Like he was kind of like a gear junkie before a gear junkie was a thing, right? Which, and you know, I inherited, you know, a ton of his stuff, and you know, it's certainly, I come by it honestly, my passion for those things. And it's a great way to grow up, you know, having those two things be kind of, you know, what your world is kind of centered around at that age.
Absolutely. It shows you a lot of different aspects of appreciation and where things coming from, you know, the real view of nature that a lot of people don't get the chance at.
Yeah.
And it just creates a really cool upbringing for sure.
Yeah. And I think, so for me, I mean, once I got it, well, let me ask you this. Was there ever a point where, you know, the outdoors, I don't want to say took a back seat, but you know, like once you get into college, were you still able to spend a lot of time, you know, hunting and stuff in the falls, or did, you know, schools and you know, girls, because, you know, let's be honest, I mean, that type of thing can, you know, kind of distract us a little bit from sure. other things, right? Was that the case for you, or were you always pretty fortunate to be able to do it, you know, year round from, you know, the time you were young till now?
During college, it was different. I was so busy between working for the university and actually going to class. I didn't have near the time, but I was thankfully very lucky in order to have a lease off of college grounds really close for a hunting area to be able to at least hunt whitetail. And then I had Lake McMurtry there in Stillwater has a draw in for duck hunting blinds too. So I was able to at least have those two things.
That's all you which need.
I mean, I didn't get to do it as much as I would have liked, but I thankfully had the opportunity whenever the time came, you know, get up at 5, go hunt, hopefully see something or not, and then go to class at my 8 a.m. I mean, so it was short stuff, but it was something at least.
Oh, yeah. Now, did you have a lot of buddies and things in college that hunted too, or were you kind of, you know, on your own when it came to that?
I did. I've had a couple buddies think. I didn't have a bunch of them that did it, but I did at least have a couple really good friends that I was able to go do that duck hunting with, and we were able to put that food plot together for the deer hunting. But most of the time, it was just by myself. But I like that. Depends on the hunt. Sometimes going by yourself and just sitting in nature, in your thoughts, enjoying the environment's a really nice therapy almost.
Oh yeah, I could not agree more, because sometimes that's what I love most about hunting. I mean, you know, I'm fortunate enough that, you know, I get to, especially once fall comes, you know, I get to spend a lot of time in a tree stand. And, you know, I don't, you know, I'm a realist. I don't expect to see a lot of deer or any deer or shooters every time I'm out. Right. I mean, that's just sure. That's just not the way it is. So I don't mind a day where, you know, the action is relatively slow, right? Where, you know, maybe a few doe and some yearlings or something come strolling in, you know, at last light, and you get to watch them for 5 or 10 minutes before, you know, they move on and you can climb down and that whole thing. But just seeing how nature works, you know, just being a part of it and being still and quiet. I mean, yeah, those are some of the more fond memories that I have, actually being in a tree stand or just being in the woods in general.
Absolutely. Just being able to take in nature and see what all it has to offer is a rare blessing in today's age.
Yeah. Yeah, you're absolutely right. So with Barbell Base Camp, how does conservation really tie into everything?
Man, it kind of the foundation in part, as far as, like I said from the get-go, building that community. You know, if we don't have anywhere to go hunting, and it kind of takes away the whole meaning of all of it. So making sure that we're doing our part to keep those lands, because if so many of us don't have the opportunity to have any big amount of land that has animals that we want to go hunt, so we have to use those public lands or BLM lands. And if we're not doing our part to keep them upkept or add more of them and try and bring in the funds and the awareness of it, then there's no point in any of it. So I try and help out with my local chapter for Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation here for the Texas Hill Country, and then the Texas Bighorn Society, just contributing my time if I can and contributing monetarily how I can whenever those opportunities arise.
Yeah, no, and that's a great outlook too, because obviously what you're trying to build with Barbell is a community of hunters and outdoor recreationists, right? And knowing that if your program is designed to help a hunter be successful, well, that hunter is in turn taking from the land. So understanding, you know, kind of the full circle of what it is that Barbell Base Camp represents and what it is, I think is super cool to see, because it's not kind of a singular focus, right? It's more of a big picture thing, and it's trying to take into account all of the elements that go into, you know, a successful hunt.
Absolutely. I mean, that's like I said from the beginning. I mean, any guy can go out and just go on a Western hunt, whether it'll be successful or not. Anybody can go do it. But if you want to take the time and put the effort in to do it right, that goes further than just the physical training side of things.
Yeah. So how was it that you first learned about 2% for conservation?
I actually learned from Go Hunt. Whenever they had first got going, I was big into excitement, you know. They were kind of the pioneer of that whole shopping side of things, which yeah. Made my life a lot easier trying to get a bunch of gear.
Yeah, shout out Go Hunt.
Absolutely. And I saw them listed on there, and I wanted to say, hey, man, this is really cool. And so I looking into it, and once I'd finally had my own type of business for that, man, I wanted to be a part of it.
Yeah, no, it's a great organization, 2%, and then there's – the brands that are associated with it are just, you know, they're
phenomenal.
Exactly. Yeah, that's a great way, well put, because what they do and the impact that they have on you know, the culture and the society of hunting is really big, and they have a really big reach. And for them to, you know, lead by example, I mean, not only Go Hunt, you know, companies like Stone Glacier as well, that are, you know, putting the big emphasis on conservation, I think is, you know, is absolutely the right thing to do. And I really commend not only those, but any company that has made that 2% commitment.
Absolutely. That commitment is still that commitment, whether they have a platform like some of the guys do and some of them don't, they're still doing their part.
Yeah.
And that's what matters.
Yeah. I mean, that's like you said, it's guys like you and I, right, who don't necessarily have that platform, but we still see the value and the importance of it. So every little bit helps, right? And it's not a competition, right? It's all doing it for the right cause.
It's not a competition at all. It's such a good cause that can make such a big impact on that we love so much. And I mean, having those big platforms is awesome for the fact of just bringing other people like you and I to that, to be able to help that much more, and it just cascade on itself.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So you kind of mentioned a couple there, but what all organizations are you giving back to through Barbell?
So currently we've got three that are our big ones, and that's going to be the Texas Hill Country Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation chapter, the Texas Bighorn Society, and the Mule Deer Foundation.
Okay, right on. Yeah, three great organizations that are doing awesome things for conservation, not only in Texas. I mean, RMEF has a some branches or some chapters here in Michigan, which I know a lot of people don't necessarily think is Michigan as prime elk hunting, but we give out about 300 tags a year, surprisingly. This is going to be surprising you, an 80% success rate last year for elk tags here in Michigan, which is, I'm sure Western hunters hear that and they're just like, okay, well, that's probably not really hunting then. Like that's fish in a barrel right there. But nevertheless, we still have a very proud elk hunting heritage here in Michigan.
Yeah, that's a really cool thing. And people don't realize that there's a lot more elk in the country than what it looks like at first glance. There's so many small herds that are coming up due to Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation, be able to transplant those into places where they originally were at that have just been killed off.
Yep.
And then we're finally being able to rehabilitate or relocate herds and to grow into these other areas and give back natural habitat that was lost.
Yeah, no, it's I love to read and see the success stories that, these organizations will post about, whether it's, acquiring land to, expand the habitat or the home range for these big herds, because it just means that, we're just another step in the right direction to maintaining healthy herds and healthy populations.
Absolutely. And on the other side of that is making sure that everybody has the knowledge and understanding of those small herds, and to not have people say, oh, I heard they released some animals over here, let's go poach them.
And right.
So growing up, we actually had the opportunity to where the Oklahoma Fish and Wildlife Department released six elk out on our ranch, but within the first 2 years, they'd all been poached off.
Oh,
so
wow.
It's like, so it's understanding that, hey, there's a bigger picture in play here, and letting those animals grow and really having a future with that.
Yeah. Now, as you're working on building Barbell Base Camp and kind of building that community and that client base that we've talked about, understanding that, there's a good chance that a large percentage of people who are using your programs are hunters of some sort, has that conversation ever come up, like the conservation piece of it? Or, do people, wonder about, your involvement in conservation in the outdoors?
Absolutely. It's not the main point of topic, but it seems to always come up. It's, hey, where you been at lately? What have you been doing? How have you been going out here and doing these things? And it's like, they'll ask, how's it like up there? And you've got to tell them, man, it's great because of this reason. People care about where they're going. It's not just hunters in this land. It's other, you got hikers and other people come in here, but everyone cares about the land and that they're doing their part to make sure that it stays nice so that people in the future generations are able to come enjoy it.
Yeah, that's very well put. So a couple more things here, Cody, before I let you get out of here and get back to building houses. mid-August here, so I know in some states hunting season opens up in the next couple of weeks here. Do you have any big hunts or anything planned this year you're going to be able to get out?
I am. It wasn't quite the year I was hoping it was going to be, between myself and hunting buddies trying to get things scheduled in with work. But I am thankfully going to be able to do a couple things. I've got 100 acres at the house, so that's always a fallback for deer hunting, and I'll always do that because that's my main bread and butter of it. But I'll be able to go back out west this year. I've just got one hunt on the books there in Colorado for an archery elk hunt, so that'll be a ton of fun. Looking forward to it, and that'll be the last week in September.
Okay, right on. Yeah, I've got I don't have anything big planned with a couple young kids. It's just I've said this before on the podcast. It's a little bit hard to get away right now. I think in a few more years, once they're a little bit older, and they're both actually in school full time, it'll be much easier to spend some time away. But I'm just preparing mentally for it for the next couple of years until I'm actually able to get out there.
I mean, there's a lot you can do. There's a lot you can do.
Yeah, and thankfully I know some people that have good programs to get me ready physically for it.
Sure, absolutely.
So, one more thing here, Cody. Where can people, you know, find out more about Barbell Basecamp, learn more, sign up, you know, do some of these workouts? Where can all that be found at?
So it's just going to be barbellbasecamp.com. That's, we've got a couple different social media sites between Twitter, Instagram. All those are at Barbell Basecamp, as well as a YouTube channel. We've got some videos of specific movements in case you might not know how to do them. We've got some trial workouts up on the website, as well as a 2-week free trial for any membership. So no reason you can't just try it. If it's not for you, it's not for you. But barbellbasecamp.com is where we've got it all.
Awesome. Yeah, I know I've definitely been poking around on there, and I'm not gonna lie, some of the workouts, like there was it sent me like a trial workout, and I was like, wait, I gotta do all this? Like, come on, like this is not what I expected, but in a good way, right? Like it's you know, it was like I can't remember which one it was, but I think it was like a week two type thing, like just, you know, to give you an idea of what you're in for. And it's, yeah, it's for those out there, it's not going to be a walk in the park. Like, you're going to work your ass off, and it's going to be worth it for sure.
Well, it's like you said with the treadmill, Marcus. You know, you can get on the treadmill and just poke the button and ride it out, but what are you really getting out of that? And you know, there's so many times where somebody goes in the gym and they'll go do a workout, but they're really just going through the motions. So that's,
yeah,
the workouts are there to try and push you physically and mentally. But we do have some easier programs for people who are just starting. So we've got the intro to Overbuilt, which is a 6-week program of get anybody in starter shape to get in those programs too.
Yeah. No, I think I'm just going to, like you did when on your first hunt there, I'm just going to dive in the deep end, add a bunch of weight and dive in the deep end here and see how we come out the other side.
You'll come out better. That's for sure.
I love it. I love it. Well, Cody, thank you a ton, man, for taking some time to join me today. I really enjoyed it, and look forward to giving Barbell Basecamp a try here in the coming weeks.
Hey, thanks, Marcus. I appreciate you having me on.
All right, man. Take care of yourself, and we'll talk soon.
You too.
All right. Well, shout out again to Cody for joining me on the podcast this week. I would also like to thank the partners of the podcast, Hardside Hydration, Stone Glacier, Go Hunt, Wild Rivers Coffee, Outdoor Class, and of course, 2% for Conservation. Do me a favor, go out and support the brands that support this podcast and help make it possible. These are all great organizations that are giving back to conservation as well. And if you're interested in learning more about 2% for Conservation, you can visit their website, fishandwildlife.org. And there you can see all the certified brands that have committed to conservation that you should support when you shop. I also encourage you guys to give 2% a follow on social media, where it's going to be only positive conservation-driven content that's landing in your feeds. So again, if you'd like to learn more about 2% for Conservation, you can look for them online on social media or at fishandwildlife.org. Thanks for joining me this week again, everyone. Hope you enjoyed the episode. Be sure to check out theaverageconservationist.com. Pick up some merchandise there to help support conservation. And yeah, feel good going into hunting season here. So as always, stay safe out there and remember that conservation starts with you.